It's time for In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105.
Morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, and it is April Fool's Day, so everything we say today can be taken with a grain of salt. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. I agree with you. Be taken with a grain of salt.
That's right. I was well put. Thinking that I might say something really ridiculous there, but this early in the morning, there may be some people who haven't gotten to that cup of coffee yet and not appreciate that it is an April Fool's joke.
You know, we should have thought something up.
Well, see, now there's where
we let it rip. Yeah, we weren't even thinking. We didn't have our thinking caps on.
I know what I'm thinking. I'm thinking of tired of rain, and I have successfully put off mowing my grass, and it looks like hell.
Did you pick your mower up yet?
I did pick my mower up.
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering if that's why.
Yeah. And I want to thank those guys out at Bud Herbert Motors. Did a great job again. It looked brand new again. And it's awesome. It's ready to rock.
They spoil you, don't they?
They spoil us. Don't act like it's
well,
just
they do me.
Me
as well. I can't. Yeah. I can't deny that. I was bragging on my equipment last week. I've already cut my yard, as a matter of fact.
Ooh.
Yeah. So things are progressing along just fine.
See, now you're in that cycle.
That's
now,
all right.
Now you have to do
you,
it.
You have to get in at some point in time.
Now, did you rake your lawn first to get up all the little sticks and twigs and all that?
As a matter of fact, I did. I had quite a bit.
Yeah.
The old birch tree.
That's kind of where we are, too.
Just a lot of stuff everywhere.
A lot of winter debris on the ground.
I had a lot.
That's
yes.
The best way to put it.
Raked it up.
Yeah.
Put the first cut on, and actually, it wasn't too tall to where, you know, I had a bag or anything. Sometimes I will bag.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I just let the old mower move it to the mulch position, and there she went.
Nice.
It was.
You know, that's one of the things that I'm kind of debating. I'm probably going to wait until tomorrow, since it rained a little bit yesterday, and then I will make that decision as whether or not I'm going to get out there and have at it.
And as a matter of fact, we're talking about power equipment.
Mm-hmm.
My weed eater, the string line,
yeah.
the still
right?
Purrs like a kitten.
Man,
I could just like
you're cooking now, aren't you?
With oil.
Yeah.
So, I was giddy. You know, everything starts up. You know, the lawnmower first pull, weed eater starts up, the leaf blower starts up.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Boy, now I'm envious because I know those two things are waiting on me. I should have taken those down to Bud Herbert Motors too when I took my mower in to have those two things serviced. But we'll see how that goes. Usually that leaf blower doesn't start until I hurl some profanities at it. And then after that, after a couple of those, it starts.
Does that work every time? A few choice words?
Yeah. 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 Either that or my wife, Lisa, comes out and goes, okay, put it down.
Are you?
Do something else.
Are you a thrower, slammer kind of guy?
No.
I have to tell you a funny story. And I may have told you this before. Now, this is not power equipment related, you know, to the lawn or to the landscape.
Yeah.
But this is a true story. When I had met Tina years ago, I worked downtown at the time, you know, I was in the corporate world, and I stopped over and picked up a new toaster from, you know, a local business here in the Cincinnati area. And about maybe 2 months later, something broke inside.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't eject the bread.
Right.
And of course, you know, I'm thinking, do I really need to keep my receipt? So I paid cash for it. Wasn't anything over the top.
Right.
And I was thinking to myself, really? Oh, I said, Tina, come here for a minute. And you know, I went down to the basement. I said, come on down here. I've never done this. And I put the toaster up on my my workbench. Mm-hmm. I took a mallet and just beat it to death. She should have seen her face. That is a true story. I said, you know why I'm frustrated? It's not this toaster. It's because I threw the receipt away. But I just had it. And I never do stuff like that. And I'm not the kind of guy that will throw my golf clubs either, you know, when I hit something in the water. But I just had to ask, do you throw things? No. Or do you get upset?
All right. Not anymore. There was a time when I did let frustration get the better of me. But I don't anymore.
It doesn't pay dividends, no, that's for sure. No.
And since you brought that up, I'll share this little story. Probably 35 years ago, playing golf with an old high school friend, and he had a temper issue. And this was over Kent County, when one of the old par threes across the lake, mm-hmm, where the green was slanted. You could never stay or land on the green. It would never stay on the green. It was a terrible design. Well, he duffs his first shot into the lake, tees up another one, duffs that one into the lake. Really mad now. A third one in, and he throws his club down on the ground, and it hits just perfectly and careens into the lake. So three balls, a couple of divots, and a golf club.
And a $90 club.
And I just shook my head, thought, well, I'll never, ever, nobody will ever catch me doing that again.
Funny stories. I just did
good stuff.
Tempers you have to control. Yeah. And like I said, they do not pay dividends. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you're like, why did I do that?
Sure. Hey, coming up at 8 o'clock, we have Inspector Chris is coming in. Chris Green, a home inspector. He is going to bring us some tips and some insights on what we need to be looking for when thinking about considering purchasing a new home. There are a lot of pitfalls, and there are a lot of things to get overlooked. And then once you sign on that dotted line, you may be stuck.
Once you sign on the dotted line. Now, how many people read all that stuff, too? You don't. Yeah. You just, here, all you need to do is sign right here. Mm-hmm. That's just saying this.
Yeah.
Here, all you need to do is sign right here. It's just saying this.
Yeah.
Just saying that. And all of a sudden, you have no recourse.
Right.
You're in trouble. You know, as a matter of fact, that's going to be a great interview. Not only is it just purchasing an existing home, if you're building a home, mm-hmm, or if a home that you're interested in too has some deck issues that, right, you may not notice or see, those are important things.
Doing any little bit of remodeling and stuff where you might need something like that? You know,
absolutely.
It's going to be a good time at 8 o'clock.
How appropriate. Chris
is going to be joining us. And it very timely, too. Just last night before I went to bed, I was checking my Facebook, and a friend of mine had posted a question on her Facebook page saying that, hey, does anybody know any inspectors? I picked up the phone, I went onto her page, I should say, and said, good news. We have a guy coming in on the show. He'll be here at 8 o'clock. His name is Chris Green, and he'll be able to answer your questions for you.
When you said we had an inspector coming in, I didn't know if it was
Inspector Clouseau.
Yeah, Clouseau. Does your doggy bite?
Yes. So he'll be in, and we'll get some of those questions.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. I'm looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. So what else is going on in your world? A lot of blooms yet?
You know what? I was going to tell you that Mammy's azalea bush is in full, mm-hmm, bloom.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, because of the hard freeze, we lost those beautiful blooms on our magnolia trees.
Yeah, that was to be expected. Oh. So that's a perfect testimonial right there, mm-hmm, of what can happen when you warm up in February like we did.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, you turn the corner, and you're in March, and you're having what you typically have in February.
Yeah.
It just didn't jive.
Right.
But we can talk about some blooms. There's some stuff out there that you can pick up at your local garden centers and nurseries, mm-hmm, things that can give you some color right now, and we'll tell you a little bit more about that when we come back out of the break. How's that, Ernie?
I like that idea.
Good deal.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some of those blooms to get you some instant color. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Weather is going to be beautiful. We'll check that forecast for you coming up in just a few minutes. But Tony, we have Sarah on the line from Colerain, who has got an issue. She needs to get rid of some carpenter ants, and she also, ooh, has a follow-up question about grass seed. So let's go to the carpenter ants first. Sarah, thanks for holding
on.
Hey,
how are you guys?
Doing well.
How are you?
I'm good.
What do you have going on with ants?
Well, I'm in a place where the first year I was in it, there wasn't any ants.
Mm-hmm.
And then last year, there was ants. And when I asked the people, because I went, they said, oh, well, we had treated the year before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we didn't have any. And I tried all kinds of treatments last year, and I just could not get rid of them. So I want to know, like, the best treatment to try to do to stop them. Whatever they did.
Sarah, did you do the treatments yourself? Or did you have somebody come in and do it? I'm sorry?
No, we just bought stuff. Like, we bought traps and we bought sprays.
Okay. And you're certain that they're carpenter ants. You've had them. You've had somebody take a look at and identify that it's a carpenter ant, right?
No.
Okay, yeah, there's a number of different ants, but nonetheless, we'll just take it from here. You know, if in fact they are carpenter ants, typically, you know, the one thing about the carpenter ant is this, it's not a wood-eating type of insect like a termite. However, carpenter ants, if they nest, what they do, they bore into wood and they make galleries and nest. So that can be an issue, and sometimes it can often be confused with termite damage. So if you really think that your situation is bad, before we go any further, I want to encourage you to call a professional, somebody that can come in, you know, and assess the situation and professionally spray. Because, you know, you can have some issues with carpenter ants in the long run. You can.
Okay.
Now, if you want to take it upon yourself and do a couple of things and see if you can curb the issue, a couple of products that I would recommend, and these two products that I'm going to tell you about right now are exclusively to be used outside. Okay, you will spray your foundation with one, and that is 38 plus. And 38 plus is under the high yield name, and you should be able to find that at your local garden center and nursery.
Okay.
Very good stuff. It's the strongest amount of permethrin that you can get as a homeowner that you can buy over the counter, so to speak. And mix that up according to the label. And you'll probably, if you don't already have one, you may go out and purchase a tank sprayer as well. And spray your foundation with it. Spray around your outside, the window edges, the doors, your garage area. And that is exclusively to be used outside. The other thing that you can do as well is I would highly encourage you to use Turf Ranger. That's a granular product. And I would spread that around the outside of the foundation in your landscape beds. That should help tremendously. Now, for indoors, you can use another product called, and here's what you need to do. Do you have kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to watch what you're using inside, so always keep that in mind, and I'm sure that you already do. Killabug 2, it contains deltamethrin in it. You can spray that inside and outside. Just allow the areas to dry thoroughly before the kids go back into the room or to that area. And also, some home remedies, which are really interesting, and I've never tried this. Ernie, do you remember somebody was talking about cinnamon as a deterrent for ants?
Yeah.
You know, like if you have stuff up on the counter. I think pennyroyal is, too. It's an herb. But that would be my approach. If I was to do it myself, I would really go hard at it outside and around the foundation. And a lot of times, you know, they're going outside, too, for moisture. We've had some moisture, and then they come back in. Yeah, they're in and out. They're in and out. But if it's something serious, Sarah, and you think, in fact, that it's a carpenter ant, I would have somebody professionally look at it, a pesticide company.
Okay.
And let us know what you find out, okay?
Now, what kind of grass issues are you having?
So, I wonder about the that type of grass that is it's really thick and almost kind of like you can see like it's weaved above the dirt, almost like an indoor outdoor carpet. Do you know what I mean?
Like is that some grasses, the when
you
zoysia grass?
You can see the dirt and everything.
Something where you can see it or you cannot see it. I didn't quite understand that.
Cannot.
Oh, so you want something that's really thick, right?
I don't know if it's really crabgrass. I don't know what kind it is. I'm just, my thought was, like, I have dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So, in having something that would cover that dirt more.
Right.
I've seen that. I don't, like, carpet kind of.
Right.
Well, really what you're talking
about. You may be talking about some of the, you know, the southern type of terps or turfs type of grass, like Zoysia, Bermuda, things like that, that thrive in the summer months up here. And it loves the heat, loves the humidity. But keep in mind, in the summer months, you know, it doesn't grow a lot. That's a good thing. What I want to say was keep in mind, in the winter months, it turns brown. Okay. So it's a southern type of turf. Another thing you might want to consider is Kentucky 31 is pretty good, wear tolerable, perfect, you know, if you have pets and a lot of kids and a lot of activity outside. That will work just as well. That's a tall fescue type of turf. So any one of those two. If you go with the Zoysia, for example, it does spread by rhizomes. You'll have to buy it in plug form for the most part. And trying to locate it is another. So, you know, I would just go out to the local nursery. I would pick up some Kentucky 31 and see where that gets you. Mm-hmm. It's a wide blade type of turf, thick turf, and it has excellent wear tolerance.
And there's another good site for you to go to maybe get some questions answered for you, Chirpin Farm. They're a local grower, and you can get some more answers on their site.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good luck, and let us know how it goes.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we're going to talk with Chris Green, the home inspector. Chris, we're going to get some questions answered for you. And when we come back, we will talk about those blooms that we promised just a few minutes ago. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, local home and garden guys. And we have got a lot planned for you today. We're going to talk a little bit right now about how you can get some color right away in your landscaping.
A lot of color. It's coming. A lot of color. Yep. Pansies are still looking great. They're rocking, as a matter of fact. And, you know, you have all of April and all the way into May, the middle part of May, until we get to that last average frost date. Uh-huh. So you have another solid 6 weeks of pansy production. They can take the cool temperatures. And we might dip down a time or two between now and then.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind. You know, we have annuals already in the nursery. And people are like, yeah, I'm going to buy this. I know I won't be able to get those later. Yes, you will.
Uh-huh.
Relax. Yeah, put the brakes on a little bit. And I don't want to hear you say, well, I'm going to leave them in the garage.
Yeah.
No, don't do all that. You know, if you know what you're doing and you're doing containers and you have the ability just to take it in for the evening and take it back out the next day, that's one thing. But keep in mind, too, a lot of our annuals, they don't do well in cool soil situations. So that temperature, that soil temperature has a lot to do with performance. So when you jump the gun, you might be wasting your money. So I'm not trying to turn you in the other direction. I just want to forewarn you. And it's not necessary, and nor do you need to think you won't have it or you'll run out. I won't be able to find it because there's plenty. We're early in the season. But right now, pansies are going to give you a burst of color for another 6 to 8 weeks at least, if not more. But it's going to take you right to the time when it comes time to plant and change out our planters, our window boxes. So pansies are still rocking, and you should have already purchased some if you haven't already. So get out to your local garden centers and nurseries today and pick them up. Also, what's really looking good, too, are the creeping phlox, a wonderful perennial, great in rock gardens, on hillsides. They're stellar. They're looking really good. The other day, I just had this whiff of like a candy smell, and I'm thinking, what is that? And it was some of the pink phlox that we have called Drummond's Pink. But they're looking really good. Most people like to buy the blue, the pinks out there, the white. Sometimes you can find the candy stripe when it comes to the creeping phlox. A great perennial to have in the garden. And also the anemone. It's hard to say. Anemones, another perennial, they're blooming. And aquilegia, which is also columbine, they're blooming. lungwort, pulmonaria is in bloom. Stuff's really, really starting to look good. And just get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Scout it out. See what's new. See what's coming in. We're getting stuff every day. Stuff's coming in. And something I really want you to lay your eyes on and check out at your local garden centers and nurseries, forsythia. Oh, my gosh. One in particular that we have in the nursery called Show Off. It certainly shows off. It's beautiful, blooms all the way up and down the stems. Incredible. The color's just so vibrant. And who doesn't like forsythia? Everybody knows, you know, this time of year when you see the forsythias in bloom, you know spring's right in the midst of us.
You know,
love it.
I want to ask you to back up just a little bit. That pink blooming phlox has got some more flagrant or
it has a great fragrance to it. I really wasn't even aware of it. Drummond's pink. And it just, you could smell this like candy smell.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm looking around and, you know, I'm over there. I'm over there by the pine straw bales. I'm thinking, I know it's not you guys.
Yeah, right.
Okay. A cute gal didn't walk by me to have perfume on. So I'm thinking, where is that coming from?
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm really going to have to check that out.
I was totally unaware of the fragrance being as such.
Uh-huh.
But it was captivating.
Right.
It really was.
So this is going to be a great day for you to get to your local home and garden center. We have a beautiful weather for today. As a matter of fact, let me run that down for you real quick.
Throw some sleet on us, will you?
Look for temperatures to climb up close to 60 today. Going to be a mixture of sun and cloud. Probably more clouds than anything else. And don't be surprised by maybe just a little shower in the northern part of our area. But then tomorrow, another gorgeous day, a little warmer, high around 67. And then some showers moving in, unfortunately, for the opening day at Great American Ballpark. Might get the parade in without showers, but according to the forecast, there'll certainly be some showers by the time the game time rolls around.
Which, I'm glad you brought that up, Al.
Yes.
But, you know, forecasting the rain and knowing that it's out there, an even better reason to get down your first application on your lawn.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because the sooner you can get down that first application from Fertilume, the three-step program for your lawn, you know, that rain is going to activate the prodiamine. That is the product that's in the first application, all seasons two, and the prodiamine is what's really going to form and set up that barrier that's going to keep out crabgrass and other unwanted weed seeds from germinating.
That's fantastic.
That's important.
Yeah.
Okay. In addition to, not only is this important as well, you know, you're going to get a little bit of nitrogen with it too, with that first fall fertilization. So allowing, you know, putting that down in a timely fashion, catching the rain on the backside is ideal.
So get to the local garden center today, independently owned and operated garden center.
And pick up your Fertilume three-step program.
Some of those some flowers.
Yes. Some garden centers, too, I want to point this out. If you don't want to take all three steps, you're going to get a better price break, too, when you do it. We want to encourage you to buy all three steps, okay? The first step goes down now all the way through almost the latter part of this month.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other two steps, they go down later in the fall, around September, Labor Day weekend, and the middle of November. So pick up all three steps. Have it ready. Have it on deck. Be ready to do all this stuff in a timely fashion because it's all about timing when you take care of your lawn or your landscape or your plants. Whatever it may be, timing is of the essence.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're working close to all those graduation parties coming up, spring weddings. Mother's Day is quickly approaching. So you've got a lot of things that you need to be planning ahead for, and that's why we're going to, when we come back, tell you there's a couple of other things that you want to make sure that you find out and pick up at your local garden center when we come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Want to remind you again, a great way to stay connected with us is to jump onto our Facebook page. Look us up and like us. We're going to like you right back. And Tony had posted some beautiful pictures. We were just talking about how to get some instant color in your landscape. That's probably one of the most important things for us psychologically, so to speak. You know, we come through the winter doldrums. It's been blah. We didn't have much of a snowfall this winter, but it's still been gloomy and gray the last couple of days. And Boy, a little burst of color around the landscape just brightens everything.
Just sunshine alone, too.
Yeah. And
you know why we didn't have snow this year? It's because I bought a snowblower. You know, rock salt, all that good stuff. Yeah. It's like go to a baseball game or out to an event, take your umbrella. It won't rain.
Yeah.
But burst of color makes you feel good. It's always uplifting. Yes, who doesn't like color? Yep. Color stimulating. Color makes us feel good. You know, the pansies are just rocking, like I said a moment ago. Also, Helleborus, they're in their glory right now.
Mm-hmm.
Full bloom. Just a beautiful perennial, especially for the shade. If you have a shade garden, Helleborus, they're awesome to have.
Now, we touched on this quite a bit last week, but I think it bears mentioning again, since a lot of people are going to take advantage of the weather today and tomorrow, to maybe do a little work in their landscape. What's one of the first things they want to do to prevent all those leaves and weeds and grasses, all those things that sort of blow into your landscape?
Well, you can't prevent things from blowing in. What do you mean, like leaves?
Growing.
Oh, I thought you said leaves.
Seeds that blow in.
Oh, seeds. The pre-emergent products are the most important thing that you need to consider to keep a lot of unwanted friends. Maybe they aren't friends or pesky friends, you know, out of the landscape bed. You know, Dimension. I love Dimension. High yields, turf and ornamental weed and grass stopper with Dimension. That is one of the best products that you can go out and pick up at your local garden center and apply that into your landscape beds right on top of the mulch. And if you're familiar with Preen, Dimension does the same thing that Preen does, but it does it a month longer. In addition to it being a lot less money-wise.
Right.
Expensive, exactly. So it's a no-brainer for you to go out and pick up Dimension. And you need to apply this product at least twice a year.
Okay.
You're going to get 4 months protection from Dimension. Now, keep in mind as well, the amount of precipitation that we get throughout the course of a season, or when we say that, you know, where I'm talking spring and summer combined, or the amount of, you know, how often you water, if you have an irrigation system, that all comes into play with these products, because the more rain you get, the more water that's present that permeates the soil surface, it breaks down the effectiveness of the product.
Okay.
So sometimes you might have to reapply a little sooner, you know, so keep that in mind. It's all weather related as well. So, but you can factor, you know, you can pretty much expect to get 4 months protection out of Dimension. And actually, I'm gonna throw this your way. I use Dimension in my lawn first thing in the spring. And I know I talk a lot about the first application, the all seasons two with prodiamine. But sometimes I get caught at work more often than I need to be or should be or want to be. And I can't always necessarily mow my yard when I need to. And then we start getting those frequent, you know, spring rains.
Mm-hmm.
I can get caught up. My lawn's too tall. I can't mow it. You know, it gets frustrating. So what I do, I go for that weed protection right off the bat with Dimension. If your lawn's healthy and it's thick, you can apply Dimension into your turf. So I'm getting 4 months. I'm going after the crabgrass primarily. And think of this. When your lawn's healthy, thick, and dense, it's going to keep out most of the weeds for you.
Sure.
At least 95% of the weed issues. The rest of it's up to you. Then I come back and I do my fertilization in the middle, latter part of May. But I also have an irrigation system and I'm watering. So my lawn stays nice, rich, and green.
Mm.
So there's a couple of different approaches to that. And that's the first time I've ever said that's the approach that I take sometimes in the spring. And it's merely because I'm caught at work. I can't always get home and mow my grass when I need to. So I'm trying to slow it down and not give it that extra burst of nitrogen. And I'm getting all that growth.
Certainly. And, you know, that applies to a lot of our listeners, too, who have young children. You're always at the soccer game, the baseball game, running them, you know, to practices or their games. You have obligations, and sometimes you need a little super secret practice here.
And I will tell you this. Most people right now, we were talking about the landscape beds and even areas in the lawn that's thin. What you're probably seeing happening to you right now as we speak, there's a lot of henbit that I've seen out there. It's a purplish bloom. Purple dead nettle, okay? Bittercress, ranunculus, you know, the buttercups, yellow buttercups. That stuff's all out there. Those are winter annual weeds, okay? And guess when they pop up? Guess when they germinate? In the fall.
In the fall.
We've talked about this for 6 years. In the fall, brother. In the fall. Are you with me? Come down to the front. I'm going to save you. Come down to the front. But these guys germinate in the fall. And what happens late in the fall, that's why I'm trying to tell you, you need to put that product down a couple of different times throughout the season. The seed disperses now, especially when bittercress is right there. And it's just right. When you walk through bittercress, the little seed pods, they just fire off. And those seeds will just lie out there the whole season. They germinate late in the season, in the fall. And then we don't see them because they're small in the turf.
And you think that you don't have an issue.
You think you don't have an issue. But when it starts to warm up in the spring, guess who you see first?
Yeah.
Are these guys.
Those guys.
Yes.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we're going to bring you up to speed on an event that Tony posted on our Facebook page. You can check it out. We'll talk about it when we come back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Before we get to the event with John Karloftis, am I saying that right?
Karloftis.
Yeah, him too. We need to talk with Sunny from Batesville. She has a, you have a challenge, Sunny. She wants to get rid of some honeysuckle.
Eh, not too bad. It's a little process at times. Good morning, Sunny. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing
well.
How much honeysuckle do you have?
Well, okay, so we bought a house about a year and a half ago, and the last summer we just allowed everything to grow just to see what was out there, you know, So, in honeysuckle, we live along the edge. We live on about an acre and a half, and we live along the edge of woods around three sides of us. And the honeysuckle is growing in every aspect all along the edge of the woods, all of the trees, and we thought we had peach trees, but they're overgrown with honeysuckle.
Wow.
So we're just trying to get everything cleaned up now, and trying to get most of it gone. I don't want all of it gone, but I want to be able to paint it. You know.
Well, it's starting to leaf out right now, so it's actively growing, which is a good thing. And what I'd like for you to do is some of the honeysuckle could be really thick at the base. There's no doubt about it. So you need a good pair of loppers, like long-handled loppers, or a pruning saw, a folding, you know, like a one of those hand-folding pruning saws. Cut it low at the base, and immediately after you cut it, I want you to pour glyphosate on that cut.
What was it called again?
Glyphosate.
Okay,
and it's in kills all. You want at least 41% glyphosate.
Okay.
And, or Roundup's purple bottle. It's got a purple cap on it. I think that's 48%. Yeah, at least 41, okay? And, as soon as you make that cut, pour it right on there. And if anything starts coming up subsequent to that, immediately spray it with Roundup or Kills All.
Okay. And that won't hurt. I really want to make sure it doesn't hurt, like, the peach trees and stuff like that that's around
No. You're just going to pour it right on the trunk.
Oh, okay.
Right where you make the cut. Cut it about, 3, 4, 5 inches above the ground. And pour the product right on the cut immediately. Okay. Don't let it heal over. Don't let it sap over. And it's growing now. It's actively growing, and it's trying to push, and it's going to be more effective. Another time to go after honeysuckle, too, is in the fall before it starts to translocate all of its energy back down into the root structure. So it can winter over, that's another good point in time to go after it in the same fashion.
Oh, okay. That's good to know that. Because I was out there with the
Sawzall. Got with the Sawzall?
Yeah, go after it. It's mean stuff. It's invasive.
And Sunny, take some pictures along the way before and after and send them to us on Facebook. We'd like to kind of follow along.
I sure will. Thank you, guys.
All right, Sunny.
Have a great day. Tony, we have Donna on the line from Western Hills. Got moss, which is overtaking the lawn. Low sunspot at the side of the house. What should she do? Donna, thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Got some moss issues, huh?
Yes.
Donna, is it in the lawn or is it just all throughout?
On the side of the house where it doesn't get a lot of sunlight,
yeah,
it's pretty much more of the mossy type thing than any grass.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can use a couple. There's a couple of products out there that you can use. They're granular called Moss Out. You know, that will work. The problem is it's going to kill it, but you're going to be back to where you kind of were. You know, it's trying to find out why, and for whatever reason, it's establishing itself or trying to. So you're saying that it's shady. And sometimes, you know, you'll have moss issues in the sun, too. So,
well, I do know that during the spring, and we have been having a lot of rain, that particular area seems to hold more of the water and the moisture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, try to come up with a way that, you know, kill it first, you know, first and foremost, try and kill it. See if you can channel or get water away from that area where it's holding or sitting or pooling, so to speak. And go from there. You have a lot of trees?
I do.
Can they be limbed up a little bit? You know,
actually, we are in the process of having a couple of them cut down.
That's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah.
Okay.
It really is. You know, it's a combination of things. It's the moisture, it's the shade, it's the air movement. And, you know, there's some of the situations where people would love to grow moss and they can't. Those that don't want it, it's all over the place.
Yeah.
But you can use those products out there. You know, anything with the ferrous sulfate in it, you know, okay, we'll get rid of the moss for you and then rake it out. It'll come up real easily.
Okay. I'll just go up to Robin's. I think they would probably carry it, right?
Yeah. Ron should have it up there. If he doesn't, give him the business.
Okay.
Tell him he needs to get it in. Or he can come over and get it from me.
Okay. I actually go up there. I was very good friends with Mr. Robin's sister, Agnes.
Oh, okay.
And so when I was a child, my godfather and my aunt, he had a greenhouse in Cheviot, and they raised orchids. My godfather raised prize-winning orchids. And so I always go up there and say, when I go up there, I always tell them, I came for my greenhouse sticks.
There you go.
There's just something about the smell.
Oh, you aren't kidding, too. When you walk into a greenhouse, like the other day when we were planting up rose bushes, you open up those big soil bins, and you can smell it on the other end of the greenhouse. It smells so good, you kind of want to eat it. I'm just saying that facetiously. But it does. It has that earthy smell, that really good smell.
Yep.
It's like such a clean smell.
It is.
Yeah.
Make you want to come back.
Because you grew up in that environment, unlike most people, you're all too familiar with that. And once you get that in your blood, it's there, and it's so recognizable. Mm-hmm. But go over and see Ron. Actually, Ron's been doing a lot of work over there at his greenhouses at Robin's. So so get up there and check it out. If he doesn't have the moss out, which he should, I can be sure to get him a bag over there for you.
Oh, okay. I'll let him know that.
All right.
Thanks for the call. Let us know how it goes. Thanks. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, you posted an event coming up at the Boone County Arboretum. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, and that's taking place April 5th. And you need to sign up for this particular event, and it's going to be at the Boone County Enrichment Center.
Mm-hmm.
And the guest speaker is John Karloftis. And if you don't know who John Karloftis is, he's a renowned garden designer, especially up in the New York City area. Mm-hmm. He's designed a lot of rooftop gardens, so that's where his notoriety really has come from. amongst other things that he has done positive for the horticultural world. So this event is taking place April 5th, and that's just next week. So, you know, if you're interested in checking this event out and listening to John Karloftis, it's well worth doing. There's no doubt about it. And you can register at www.bcarboretum.org/events. And check it out. You know, it's just, John's going to give you a lot of great ideas and details on how to really establish a really nice type of garden situation. And I might try and attend that event. I know that a lot of people should be there.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, got some more things to talk about. Need to get done before it gets too deep into the spring. We'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we're going to have to maybe go get another cup of coffee. We're having trouble getting our words to come out in the proper order. For some reason or other, I just could not say tree, systemic tree, and...
tree and shrub.
Tree and shrub.
Systemic drench. Insect drench. You know, you're right. I kind of feel like that this morning, too. And I had this raspiness in my voice and throat. You know, it's a change in the weather. I'm outside, inside, outside, inside. But I'm going to do my best.
Yeah, just can't see what I'm saying. Just not coming out of my head right. But it's also one of the times in the spring that the couple of things that you want to get done before we get too deep in the spring is those plants,
protect our shrubs
and, yes, and that need a little help.
We really need to protect our shrubs. Mm-hmm. And I can't say this enough, and especially boxwoods. You know, our boxwoods are subject to psyllid damage. Also leaf miner damage. And all I want to say is this, it takes a long time for a boxwood to get to its mature height.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, boxwoods are not in the supply chain like they once were, especially the larger sizes. So we definitely want to take all measures necessary and possible to protect our boxwoods. And the Fertilume Systemic Tree and Shrub Drench is the best product on the market that you can use to water in around your boxwoods and keep these insects off of your boxwoods.
So why are they not in the supply chain?
Well, you know, really, when the economy tanked back in 2008,
yeah,
you know, so did a lot of home expansion, home building, and a lot of people lost their jobs. You know, people weren't out spending money on unnecessary things.
Gotcha.
And landscaping is a necessary thing.
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you.
It is.
But, you know, and a lot of nurseries, larger nurseries, went out of business. And I'm going to be frank about something else, too. There are a couple big box stores that product that's in their nurseries is on consignment. And therefore, a lot of times it doesn't get taken care of. They don't care. They only water certain days of the week, come heck or high water.
Yep.
And guess what? If it doesn't scan, the grower doesn't get paid. That's what the consumer does not know. Those of us who have independent garden centers and nurseries, we have to buy our product. We got 30 days to pay for it.
Right.
And we have to take care of it. And we got to help you take care of it. We got to give you the right information to take care of it. You know, there are just some of those situations where, hey, if we sell it, we sell it. We guarantee it. We don't take care of it. And if it scans, we'll pay who sent it. And that's why we get upset with that. So without me getting on that bandwagon, I'm jumping back off. But protecting our boxwoods is really of the essence. And, you know, if you have a row of boxwoods and say they're mature, they're 3 foot by 3 foot,
mm-hmm,
and I'm talking like green velvets, if you lose one, it's going to be really hard. It's going to look like a tooth is out. Someone just knocked out your front tooth. It's going to be hard to replace that boxwood with one of size that's going to match the others. So be sure to protect your boxwoods. When you use this product, what's really important is that you use the right amount of the product based on the height of the shrub, the boxwood. If it's 3 foot, the way that it works is like this. You're going to use 3 ounces of the product per foot height of plant to a gallon of water. So if your boxwood's a foot high, you're going to use 3 ounces of the product, 1 gallon of water, and pour it in, excuse me, slowly around the base of your boxwood. If it's 3 foot, you need 9 ounces. And it will give you 1 year protection. I am telling you right now, leaf miner, once it gets into the boxwoods, it's ugly. Google it so you know what it looks like. You know, they live in between the leaf. These little larvae live in right. between the leaf. You'll have these little bumps in the center of your boxwood leaves.
Yep. And you can jump onto our Facebook page. We'll Google that and post that up so you can check that
out. And also, not only your boxwoods come into play here with the drench, so do your rose bushes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what that looks like. You get into the middle part of summer, and the leaves are just totally destroyed. They're chewed up. You sure. thought Ernie came into the landscape, helped himself overnight, and went on. It will protect your rose bushes. And I'm telling you, your rose bushes will look beautiful if you take care of them with a drench mm-hmm. and you fertilize them monthly. They're going to rock for you.
Good. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Joe on the line from Monroe, and he wants to know, is it an old wives' tale, or is it true that you shouldn't plant your peppers next to your tomato plants, or tomato plants, depending on where you're from? Hey, Joe, thanks for the call. Do you grow a lot of peppers?
I do, but I haven't really had a lot of luck. I was wondering if it's an old wives' tale about planting them next to each other, or something to do with cross-pollination. What do you guys know about that?
The pollination part of it, I'm not really familiar with or ever really heard that. You know, crop rotation in general is very important. So, you know, for example, your tomatoes. Let's talk about the space where your tomato plants are. Do you plant in the same place all the time?
Generally, yes.
Yeah, that's not good. How big are your beds or is your garden?
Probably 6 feet by 2 feet.
Okay. Try this, okay? You know, when you plant plants in the same spot year after year after year, if you start experiencing some disease issues and so forth, it's not a good thing, and it can become soil-borne. And when I say that, I mean that disease resides in the soil, and you're more than likely to see and experience that same disease the next season. So that's why crop rotation is very, very important. And I would try this. You know, try growing some of your bell peppers in containers.
Okay.
You can be very successful with that. And I've grown bell peppers relatively close to tomato plants, and I've not had issues. But I don't grow bell peppers next to my tomato plants every year or other things. I'm always mixing up my garden. I mean, you know, 1 year I grew okra and kohlrabi, you know, or hot peppers. I'm just always mixing it up just to experience it. But not everybody does that, nor does everyone have the space to do such. But try a couple different approaches with the way you garden. And also, I like the mulch with straw or grass clippings. And for this reason only, you know, if you are experiencing some of these soil-borne issues or diseases on your tomato plants, do you ever get blossom end rot too?
Not that I've noticed.
Okay, you can get blossom end rot as well on your peppers. But peppers like it hot. I mean, they love the heat. And are you? And here's another thing that comes into play is when you plant these, your peppers and your tomato plants, are you setting them out a little early?
No, I'm usually planting them about the same time, about mid-April or so.
Yeah, it's a little early. Because the ground temperatures are still cool. And a lot of times, I don't plant my tomato plants until the end of May. I'm past the last average frost date. Sometimes we get away with it. But believe it or not, remember last year we had a frost in May,
yeah.
mid-May?
Yeah.
You know, when the soil, anytime you put warm weather or warm-loving kind of vegetables and things out there in the garden, like tomato plants especially and peppers, when the soil temperatures are cool and damp, they sit there. They don't know what to do. It's like us jumping into the Ohio River or a cold swimming pool. It's just like, whoa, I'm not used to this. Because they've been growing inside in a greenhouse in warmer temperatures. The soil's a lot warmer. And then when you put them in the ground too early, prematurely, they sit there. That's not a good situation to put them in. A lot of times, too, tomato plants, when you put them out too early, because of the cooler soil conditions, you'll notice sometimes that the foliage will turn a purple color. That's because they can't pull up nutrients. So it's more detrimental, and it's not a benefit to get things out early to get that first tomato plant. And you also need good pollination, you know. So there's a lot of factors that come into play. What are you experiencing exactly with your peppers? Just the production?
Yeah, just low yield.
Are you? And you know, sometimes too, I always pick the first one off. I let that plant. I want that plant to get larger, and where it can support more of the peppers, and maybe bloom more. Try something with a higher phosphorus amount in it too, a fertilizer for bloom production. What do you use when you fertilize?
Generally, just water.
You just water. I would do one. I tell you what. I like a product out there. It's called Biotone from Espoma. This year, when you plant your plants, I want you to use Biotone and mix it with the soil when you plant, okay? And then I want you to use, like, Tomato Tone on your tomatoes as a fertilizer and also your peppers. And let's see if that doesn't make a difference. What garden center are you close to?
Burns.
Okay. I know Burns sells Espoma's products. And it's like eating well. It's organic. Stop in at Burns, pick up Biotone, and pick up Tomato Tone, and see if that doesn't make a big difference with your plants this year.
I will.
And,
all
right.
I'll
and
call
please
back and let you know how it did.
Follow up with me.
Yeah.
Will do.
All right.
Take pictures thanks along so the way. That'd be great. Thank you. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll have Inspector Chris with us. Chris is the owner-operator of a home inspection service, and he is going to help give you some tips and advice. This is a time of year, too, when a lot of people start looking to buy a new home, build a new home, remodel their home, and you always we'll find that it will need to be inspected, and it's important to know what you have to ask. We need to pause for a moment. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Been covering a lot of ground today, and it's going to be beautiful, too. Weather outside is going to be very pleasant today. Cloudy. But temperatures up around 60 and then around 70 for tomorrow. I do want to mention tip of the hat going out to all of those people involved and help restore the Rabbit Hash General Store so that it remains on the historic registry. And that grand opening is today. They're going to cut the ribbon at 9:30 and then the official grand opening is at 1.
Are you going?
I am thinking about going down.
You're not going home take a nap?
Well, I will need a nap,
I can't nap, but I know that you do, and that's why you can go later in the day.
Yes. Naps are great.
Hey, Camby. I don't know. I just, you know, think about it. You know, you sleep, if you sleep 8 hours a night, do you get 8 hours of sleep a night, you think?
Try to.
Okay, if you're 60 years old and 24-hour day, this is phenomenal when you think about it. It's incredible. It's just hard to fathom. That if you're 60 years old, just think about this. You work 8 hours a day, you sleep 8, and then whatever for 8. So 20 years, you sleep 20 years. Isn't that hard to believe?
It is.
A third of your life.
Yeah, see, we've been doing a lot of math.
I know you struggle with math. That's okay.
The gazindas. When you said 3 gazinda gallons and all that stuff, I didn't
you get
know
messed
what was
up.
Going on.
Yeah. That's why you struggle.
My head starts.
You're like a
spin.
Fish out on a bank flopping. I get it.
So true.
But you know, when I go back, we were talking about the Fertilum tree and shrub systemic insect drench.
Uh-huh.
When you mix that, pour that product into the bucket first, and then add the water to it. I believe that it dissolves and it stirs up a lot better. And then slowly pour it around the base of the plant. And if you've been having issues with your rose bushes in recent years because of the rose slug,
mm-hmm.
which is the sawfly larva, you know, they're not just there one time. They have many generations. And if you want your rose bushes to look nice, put this product on them. I can't tell you enough. I wish somebody just call in and tell me, have your rose bushes not fared better using this product versus when you didn't use this product?
Mm-hmm.
I need a good testimonial. I can tell you. But it's so true. It really, really, really is. Azaleas, you know, you were talking about the azaleas.
Yeah.
You know, another plant that struggles for a number of reasons. I love the azalea, and it is true that azaleas, rhododendrons, you know, they're not native to this area. And therefore, we need to prep the soil initially when we plant them. We need to make sure that the soil is acidic enough to where they like it to be. You know, use a lot of peat moss with your existing soil. But in addition to that, the soil conditions, you know, the azalea being in the right place, morning sun up to the early afternoon, then maybe some afternoon shade. You know, we're a little warm here sometimes during the summer months.
Mm-hmm.
And lace bugs. Lace bugs love azaleas. They just chew them up like nobody's business. And you can tell when you look at the foliage on an azalea, it looks a little stippled or it's really light and pale in color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look underneath the leaf, and if you see these little black specks, more than likely it's lace bug damage. So when an azalea is stressed out for whatever reason, insects know.
Sure they do.
So this product, the systemic drench, is very beneficial on your azaleas as well. A lot of value there. But I also want to caution everybody that uses this product to use it in a responsible fashion, you know, when things aren't in bloom, because we want to protect our beneficial insects. So it's a fine line to walk. We talk about a lot of these products, but I also want people to be aware of, we need to protect our beneficial insects as well. And I'm all about both.
Mm-hmm.
So it's being responsible. Use products accordingly. Just what the label says, do what it says. More is not better.
Right.
Follow. Okay?
Read and follow directions.
Yes, absolutely. I can't say that enough. And it's so important. A lot of these companies that put products out, and also with fertilizers, that this just goes all the way across the board. Herbicides, pesticides, fertilizers. A lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of research and developments put into these products to tell us exactly what formulations work best. Not what we think works best. You know, I'm going to put a little bit more on here. I'm going to put a little bit more on here.
I've got my special blend.
No, don't do that. You know, another thing, too. I say this all the time. I hear people, you know, a lot of people come into the garden center, and they'll tell me, just as the gentleman was talking about the old wives' tale, planting peppers next to tomatoes. I've never had a problem. You know, a lot of times peppers will struggle based on temperature, being planted too early, or too much nitrogen, too, because you get all plant. But he's never fertilized. That's why I was telling him to try some of the Espoma products. But, you know, just taking care of things like we should is important in being responsible.
Yeah, that's probably the key there is the fertilization for him. And I know you looked up a couple of things that confirm what you said.
I grow
a lot of peppers and a lot of tomatoes.
I like peppers. I don't have a problem. But, you know, I think a lot of those things are wives' tales. But, you know, and when you hear a neighbor down the street, you know, what I was leading into as well, they tell you, put lime on this or put lime on that. I'm going to sweeten the soil. I'm going to soften the soil. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
It really doesn't. Get a soil sample. Know what your soil is comprised of. Know what it's made up of. And it's real simple to do a soil sample. And go from there. That's so important.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A great place to start.
You know, get with your extension services. You know, I brag on the guys over in Northern Kentucky all the time. Sarah in Campbell County, Michelle in Kenton, Dave in Boone. A well-oiled machine over there. Those guys like what they do. Everything's there. A wealth of information. You know, get a soil sample done. And then based upon that soil sample, I love when I see this come into the garden center.
Sure.
You know, they will tell you exactly what you need to do to be successful. You know, when a plant is in its perfect spot with the ideal pH range, whatever nutrients that are available to that plant when it's in its ideal pH range, it will pull it in. Once it gets outside of that range, you could throw at it whatever you want, and it's still not going to really readily pull it in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where a lot of things break down. I can tell you're just looking at me like, what?
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Coming up in a few minutes, Inspector Chris is going to be joining us at 8 o'clock. We're going to talk about some home inspections. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and a little feature that we have for you, plant of the week. Now's the time when you start thinking about what could I put in my landscape or in my lawn area, around the fence or trees, and Tony's got some great ideas.
Well, this week we're going to talk about vines, vining plants, and it kind of triggered a thought process for me last week. In your absence, you weren't here. A gentleman had called in, and he was trying to cover an unsightly area. It was a wall that had a little bit of graffiti on it. And he was looking for something vining. And I'm thinking, gosh, there's so many different vines out there that we have to choose from. A lot of perennial vines, a lot of annual vines. And we're going to touch base on some of those. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorites, gosh, I tell you what, it's a plant that doesn't get the merit that I think that it truly deserves. And perhaps a lot of people really aren't that familiar with it, but it's been around for a while. That's the climbing hydrangea. Ooh. A beautiful, beautiful specimen. And just if you have a space, you know, going vertical really does a number of things for us. Mm-hmm. You know, it allows us to garden and do more things going vertical with like a trellis or using a fence of some sort or a pergola or an arbor. And it has a beautiful appeal about it. You know, a lot of times when you have an arbor and you have climbing roses going up the side or perhaps a clematis or anything of the sort or a honeysuckle, it takes you into another room. It takes you into another dimension. You know, it adds that element into the garden.
Certainly.
And we like those little outdoor living spaces, those rooms. And when you have something like that off in the distance, it's like, whoa, where does that lead to? So it's very captivating. It's very drawing. But in particular, the climbing hydrangea, beautiful deep green heart-shaped leaves. And, you know, it gets a white bloom on it. And this white bloom just really shows off that dark foliage. The thing about the climbing hydrangea is this. I've had one before, and we had a little bit of an ivy issue at one time, and it's getting all up in it, and I just cleaned everything up. So I'd like to go back at it again. You know, you like to plant it on the north side of a home. You know, it gets a little warm here in our area. When I was up in the upper northwest, I saw one on the side of a building that was just gorgeous, but it was full sun, but yet the temperatures are a lot cooler up in the Oregon and Washington state areas. Mm-hmm. But I had mine on the north side of the house, and it did extremely well, but it wasn't as prolific from a blooming standpoint as I would have liked for it to be. And that has a lot to do with the amount of sun that they get. So they need a little bit of, they need some sun in order for them to bloom. And, you know, giving them at least, I would say if you can get them up to 6 hours with morning sun up to around noon to 1 o'clock or so,
right?
Maybe two, pushing it, would be best suited for that bloom production. Even if it's a little bit less, it's still a beautiful plant. What else that I like about it is that it has other seasonal value to it as well. Its bark, its stems on the bark, it exfoliates. So during the winter months, it has a lot of appeal to it. When you see that bark and that exfoliation of it, it's very, very, very attractive. This is a plant that's well worth looking for in the garden centers and nurseries. And one other little tidbit, they're a little slow to get started. So I highly, highly encourage you to use a root stimulator. Fertilume makes a great one. Or use Espoma's Biotone, something to stimulate it to get it kicked off well.
Okay.
When I planted mine, I used Fertilume's root stimulator, and it took root right away and put on some really, really nice growth. So look for a climbing hydrangea at your local garden centers and nurseries. I think you'll be really pleased and glad that you did.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home garden guys. And Tony, we have Ronnie on the line from Rising Sun. It's going to be starting a new garden in the yard area, looking for any fertilizer advices or things that you recommend to start off with.
Ron, what type of garden? Is it vegetable or is it flower?
Vegetable.
Okay.
Yep.
Raised beds or are they just existing gardens? Like,
there ain't nothing there yet right now. It's just grass. I'm getting ready to till it up. I'm going to do my first till and get all the grass out.
Okay.
I was just wondering if there's, you know, something I can kind of till in with it to help the soil.
Absolutely. I always like to add anything that's like manure compost. Mm-hmm. And when I say manures, I'm really referring to manures that have aged properly. A lot of times, you know, you start getting manures in there too soon, a little hot, maybe a little bit of weed seed, especially with horse manures and so forth. But I would start with those type of amendments. I would add a little topsoil to it. Like I said, compost cow manure. Posey Power is another really good product that I think highly of. Now, it is a sterilized horse manure with a little bit of gypsum, a little bit of lime, and brewer's grain. I've used those two products in recent years with great, great success. Also, part of the Fertilum family, there's another product out there from Natural Guard that is an organic gardening soil, has a little bit of kelp, and another element that I really like a lot, too, from our earthworm friends are the castings. And it's OMRI certified. And for those that aren't familiar with anything that's OMRI certified, O-M-R-I, that is the Organic Material Review Institute that certifies these products as being true to what they're supposed to be. No pesticides, no herbicides, and it's clean, and it is what it is. So if you want to go organic, those are the kind of products you want to look for. But just a combination of those things turned in over time is going to make for a really nice, healthy vegetable and garden bed.
Okay.
Now, if you like to go traditionally, you know, with other fertilizers, a lot of people like to use just 10-10-10. You can certainly do that, or 12-12-12. But keep in mind, when you're gardening with vegetables, what's really, really important is staying low with nitrogen. A lot of times nitrogen gives us a lot of growth. We'll get all plant but no fruit production.
Okay.
So that's very important as well. And I've seen some of these green boxes with like a 20% nitrogen in it. That's too much. You know, it's just crazy. Use things that are low and you'll be successful.
Okay.
Have you thought about raised beds?
Yeah, I've thought about that.
That's another great way to garden. It really is. And when you get that nice loamy texture, you know, working for you and your benefit, you can grow a lot of root vegetables like carrots and so forth, potatoes, all that stuff just thrives in there. Radishes, onions. It's a great way to garden.
Okay.
So what are you thinking about planting?
I'm going to plant some corn, potatoes. Some peppers.
Mm-hmm.
I got some radishes, some onions, just a little bit of everything, really.
Yeah, and right now, you know, cool crops are where it is. And when I say cool crops, I'm talking about those that are, you know, the cool season type of plants, you know, that we can grow and harvest. Cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, collards, onions, all that good stuff. Spinach. Spinach is great to grow. I'll tell you something else I would consider if I had the space. Asparagus. Oh, gosh, I love asparagus. Nothing like it when it's freshly picked. When you cut those spears. You like asparagus?
I don't know if I've ever had it or not.
Oh, come on.
Pretty tasty.
Oh, good stuff.
That's Brussels a good way to sprouts. Start, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, happy gardening to you, bud. Have at it. What garden center is close to you?
McCabe's.
Yeah, go there and see Scott. He should set you straight. If he doesn't, I'll go over there and I'll talk to him for you. Yeah,
alrighty.
Good guys right. Over there. Okay, have a good weekend.
Ryan, take pictures and post them. You know, we'd like to follow along. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, coming up in about a half an hour. Inspector Chris will be joining us to talk a little bit about home inspections. And we've also got a lot of ground to cover when we come back.
And I want to talk a little bit more about vines.
Vines.
So hang in there with us. Give us a call at 749-B105.
Just call service. 513 Service is the number for Herman Services. They're the best for plumbing, heating, AC, and electric. They're fast, friendly, and have an easy number to remember in a crisis. 513 Service. Yes, it's that easy. Just call Herman at 513 Service.
So the people at Mattress Firm are like, yeah, we know we have a lot of sales. And they do, which is awesome, but this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity sale, up to 70% off. I will tell you, I am horrible at math. Everyone that knows me could tell you I'm horrible at math, but I know for a fact that 70% off is a lot. That is a great savings, and up to $2,000 off floor models. So if you're thinking to yourself, you know, I could use a new bed. I don't really feel like spending the money right now. The one I got, it's not broken. I mean, it still works. I could use a better one. This is the time to go ahead and give in. 70% off. That's awesome, right? And you're going to get a great night's sleep every single night. I mean, that is money well spent, because when you get a good night's sleep, you just feel better throughout the day. You wake up refreshed, all that good stuff. So what are you waiting for? Go take advantage of this awesome sale going on right now at Mattress Firm. Save money, sleep happy.
Katie recently used the basement doctor. Katie, why did you use their services?
Every time it rained, we would have a constant flow of water in the basement from the wall to the drain.
And of course, a wet basement led to other problems, right?
That's right. We had mold on the walls and the ceiling. We had no idea what we were getting into. We didn't even know if it could be fixed.
And it was the basement doctor to the rescue.
They showed up, fixed the problem, and now we have a dry, usable basement.
Fix your leaky basement today. Visit basementdoctorcincy.com.
Water conservation has become more important than ever. Hey, I'm Tony Works from B105's In and Around the House. Central Farm and Garden has a new generation of grass seed. Once called Finelon Elite, it's now called Finelon H2O. Finelon H2O provides exceptional turf quality, tremendous wear tolerance, and excellent disease resistance, all while using less water, less fertilizer, and fewer chemicals. Here's where you can find Finelon H2O.
Better Speed in Covington and Edgewood, Hafner and Son, Cincinnati, Bloom and Garden Center, Pinecrest Nursery, Cincinnati, BDK Feed Blanchester, and Divers Middletown.
Maddox Garden Center provides the best products, supplies, and advice to gardeners from novice to expert, like the Fertilome three-step program. Now's the time to apply your first application to prevent weeds and crabgrass this spring. Fertilome is the best and longest-lasting product on the market, and that saves you time and money. Maddox Garden Center in Florence. Visit MaddoxGardenCenter.com for a coupon to save up to 25% on the entire Fertilome three-step program.
Maddox Garden Center.
Interested in a great full-time or part-time job with a growing company? Then join us at United Dairy Farmers' spring hiring event. We're looking for store clerks and shift leaders for all locations in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky. Come to one of our stores on Thursday, March 23rd from 4 to 7 p.m. or Tuesday, April 4th from 4 to 7 p.m. for on-the-spot interviews. To pre-register, apply online at www.udfhiring.com. That's www.udfhiring.com. Pre-registration is not required and walk-ins are welcome. Discover why there's no place like UDF. Equal opportunity employer.
Honey, you promised me a new deck this spring.
I know, but I've been holding out for the McCabe Lumber Deck Expo. It's coming up Saturday, April 8th. We should go and check out what's new.
Get to the McCabe Lumber Deck Expo, one day only, Saturday, April 8th. You'll see the best decking brands and the latest trends. Talk to the manufacturers and get special discounts. Enter to win a set of Trex outdoor furniture, a Weber grill, and enjoy lunch from Queen City Sausages. The McCabe Lumber Deck Expo, Saturday, April 8th, 9 till 5.
A hassle-free buying experience starts at carryautomotive.com, right by you.
Let's get back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Call us at 749-B105.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been covering a lot of ground today, getting you ready for spring, which arrived a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But we don't want you to wait too long to get a couple of things done. And before we went into the break, Tony was talking about vining plants.
Yeah, vining plants are some of the plants we forget about sometimes. And again, you know, last week a gentleman had called up and he was trying to hide some graffiti. And mm-hmm. I thought, well, you know, what a wonderful topic. It's something I've overlooked, and I apologize for that. But there's a lot of cool vining plants out there. And a lot of times, too, this is really interesting as well, is that a lot of questions in the garden center are homeowners who say, hey, you know, I'm looking for something that can give me a little bit of privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I don't like my neighbors, but when we go out and we grill out or we sit on a deck or the patio, we would like a little bit more privacy. And, you know, we all need our privacy.
Right.
So a lot of times I think some of these vines that we're going to talk about can do just that. They can give you a little bit of privacy. In addition to some beauty with some of those that bloom, some of those are more just more green, you know, it's all dictated upon what it is you're looking to get from a vining type of plant.
Sure.
There are a lot of annual type of vines that are available to us at our garden centers and nurseries. And a lot of these vining plants, I'm just going to run down a few of these. You know, a lot of times you see them more readily available in seed format than you do in a, you know, a ready to buy plant. But either way, you know, vines, they provide a lot of interest to our gardens and our landscape. And one in particular that a lot of people will talk about too is the wisteria. Who doesn't like the wisteria?
Yeah.
But I'm here to tell you something about the wisteria. If you're to grow a wisteria, you better make sure you have a proper support system or mechanism set up to accommodate what that plant's going to be capable of growing to. And I'll give you a perfect example. If you cruise downtown on Fifth Street and go right past the P&G Towers, the courtyard, look at that structure. Okay.
All right.
You know, and for the wisteria in a lot of ways too, a very sound, strong, sizable pergola is what I would recommend you have. That's so, so important. The structure has to support that plant, bar none. And there's various types of wisteria that are available out there, the Japanese, the Chinese, and even the American wisteria. One that I like a lot, and you'll find it in your local garden centers and nurseries, is Amethyst Falls, a beautiful color, a reliable bloomer. Now, here's what else I want to tell you, just a little tidbit of information before I go on to another vining plant.
Mm-hmm.
Wisteria, when you're in a garden center, it's important. I like to tell people, you buy one that's in bloom. Okay, because you know it's going to bloom. Sometimes, you know, when somebody starts a wisteria from seed or a cutting, it could take years for that to bloom. It could take 2 to 3 years.
Wow.
It could also take up to 15. So look for one that's in bloom, and you know it blooms because you've seen it with your own two eyes. Right. There's no question about it. Wisteria, a very wonderful plant to have. And, you know, here, this is a type of vine that will grow over a pergola just right and provide a fair amount of shade. So it makes sitting outside a lot more comfortable during the daytime. So, you know, vines have a lot of applications about them that can become so beneficial. Shade, you know, it can take care of an ugly, some unsightly views that you might be looking over at your neighbor's yard. And he's got like 8 dogs and, you know, all these trails throughout his yard. You don't want to see it. So vining plants are very, very important.
So there are restrictions on some of them, I guess, where you can plant them, because it clearly the name indicates that they're going to spread. Is that something that will be displayed on the tag so that the homeowner can come in and go?
Absolutely. A lot of these can grow to various heights, okay? You know, for example, we were talking about the climbing hydrangea. You know, it can grow up to 30 feet in length.
Right.
Another really cool plant or vining plant is one called Dutchman's Pipe. Now, it's more of an annual to our area.
Right.
Very, very unique, the bloom itself. It has heart-shaped leaves. It, too, will require a trellis. It can get 10 to 15 feet. Okay? It's more touted for its unique blooms. It just has this, like, it's just really big. It has this plum color with these like these speckles. It's really sharp. It's a neat plant. And you know, you can find it too at your local garden centers and nurseries. And the really cool thing about the Dutchman's Pipe is those vines are a great host for the swallowtail butterflies and also a wonderful habitat for other beneficial insects. So kind of worth having in the garden. And talking about butterflies, don't forget, the butterfly show kicked off last week over at the Crone.
Oh.
So as we just mentioned butterflies,
yep, very nice.
I thought I'd throw that out there. Another really cool vining plant that I think that is really awesome in the landscape is a trumpet honeysuckle. And one in particular I think about is called Major Wheeler. So that's definitely worth having.
I want to ask you about that. We need to pause for a moment, but when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the vining plants and especially about the honeysuckle. I've got a humorous story to share with you about that. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Your local home and garden guys, coming up in just about 20 minutes, we'll have Inspector Chris with us and talk about some home inspections and some things you need to know and a few tips. Right now we're talking about vining plants. Before we went into the break, Tony had mentioned honeysuckle plants. And earlier in the show, we had someone who was trying to get rid of some. So apparently there are some non-invasive.
Yes, it's not that type of honeysuckle. It's a trumpeted honeysuckle that is vining. And one in particular I really like a lot, Major Wheeler. It grows to about 8-15 feet, give or take. Mm-hmm. And 3 to 6 feet in width, you know, somewhat. You know, and it too is great on trellises, a fence line, an arbor of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Full sun, flowers late spring, you know, sometime May or June. Beautiful scarlet orange flowers with a yellow inside.
Wow.
Yeah. Really, really attractive. And not only will you like the blooms, but so will the hummingbirds.
Nice.
Yeah. So will the hummingbirds.
Yeah.
And there's another added feature or value to the trumpeted honeysuckle is that, like, later in the season, you know, there's these red berries that form on it, and the birds love them. They're attracted to it.
Huh.
And it's not fussy about soil conditions. So, therefore, some of these plants are well worth their value. Sure. They deserve a lot of merit. And I think sometimes, you know, often forgotten.
Right. The trumpeted honeysuckle, I guess if the hummingbirds like it, the pollinators are going to like it too, the bees. Every time I hang my hummingbird feeder out, it's got mm-hmm. the little ports on the bottom of the, you can tell when the bees are struggling because eventually it gets clogged up with bee bodies. They come to it and try to crawl in it, and I have to clean it out every now and then.
You know, something interesting that I didn't mention about the wisteria that I had forgotten about. The American wisteria and a Chinese wisteria, its tendrils, as it's growing, they twine counterclockwise.
Huh.
The Japanese wisteria twines clockwise. Kind of interesting.
See,
you wouldn't have been able to sleep tonight had I not told you that.
No, I would have been wandering around
aimlessly
about that.
Yes, in the dark. Like, you know,
yeah, I'd wander even clockwise and then counterclockwise.
Yeah,
and
yeah, you got it. I just thought I'd throw that out.
No, that's great information.
Yeah, some other, actually, I've had this one, this particular vine in the nursery before, a little different than what you would see when it was just growing naturally out in the wild. A lot of people really like the American bittersweet vine.
Mm-hmm.
Gives you the beautiful berries, the orange berries. You use it in the fall. You can do a lot of decorations with it. That's another interesting vine. Although I did have it a few years ago and nobody took interest to it.
Really?
Maybe not as interesting as I thought.
Oh. Hmm.
Yeah, what can I say? Also, I Boston ivy. I love Boston ivy.
Yeah.
Just takes off. Beautiful red color in the fall. Doesn't do anything spectacular from a blooming standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
However, it covers a lot of ground. It can grow up to 40 feet.
That's what I was going to ask you about. Any specific ground cover vining plants that you prefer other than...
Well, some of these, you can leave some things on the ground and it'll stay on the ground.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, we're going vertical, dude.
Yeah.
We're going up.
Gotcha.
Not sideways. I don't want to get all sideways. I want to go up. But a lot of different things. You know, Virginia creeper, I was talking about the other day, last week with Bob, as a matter of fact. Another really interesting, fast-growing vine. It too, turns a beautiful red, burgundy, scarlet color in the fall. And a lot of people sometimes get a little confused. They think it's kind of like a poison oak or ivy of some sort, but it's not. And these are, you know, when I thought about the Boston ivy and the Virginia creeper, I also want to caution you about this. Don't allow it to get up on the brick of your home.
No.
It will destroy some of that, the mortar in between. And I've seen it happen. And some people say, no, it doesn't. I'm here to tell you it does because I've seen it.
Well, and once it's on there, you almost have to sandblast it.
Oh, you
got to
sandblast it and wire brush it and all that other good stuff. Mm. Have an area out in the yard, away from the house, and you don't get all those little tendril feet looking pieces on your brick or your siding or what have you. But, you know, on switch gears, you know, we're talking about vining plants and those that we just mentioned primarily are some of the perennial versions. There's a lot of annual versions out there, and one of them that I really like a lot and a lot of people are familiar with, that is the black-eyed Susan.
Oh, beautiful.
Oh, Thunbergia. Yeah. Who doesn't like that one? And that dark center black eye, you know, comes in like a rich, rich orange color with that black center. Very, very attractive.
Mm.
Also like a yellowish color. So be sure to look for that at your garden centers this upcoming spring season. Also, we were talking about the passion flower. You know, I thought we talked about it earlier. It can grow up to 15 feet in height and sun to part shade. And it has white petal flowers that are overlaid by these center, like, I don't know how to describe it, almost a filament-looking kind of bloom that sometimes can be like purple, white, and blue. Really, really cool. And it easily can be trained to grow up a fence or a trellis. Great for containers, too. You know, a lot of these things we can put in containers with topiary-type trellis pieces in them that will allow them to climb up. And this is a type of plant, too, when you, you primarily see it, unless some people will grow it in the nursery to start it out early in the season. Most people will buy it in seed packets. And some of these you're going to need to allow the seed to soak for 24 hours. It just makes for germination a lot easier.
Okay.
It's a little bit of a tip.
So does that replicate getting some rainfall and it sitting in moisture?
Well, it just kind of softens things up and gets it kicked off.
Right.
Moonflower, really, really cool. Grows about 10 to 20 feet, sun.
It sounds cool.
Fragrant. Well, I'll tell you why it's called the moonflower. Fragrant, giant white blooms.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Opens in the evening and will last until the morning.
Very nice.
Perfect, too, for trellises and so forth. Again, a little tip, you know, you want to allow those seeds to sit in water overnight before mm-hmm. you sow the seed.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, too, will come into the nursery and they'll ask for cardinal vine. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Mm-hmm. It, too, is a neat vine. Loves the sun. You know, grows on the average of 6 to 10 feet. Beautiful twining type of vine with fern-like foliage. Really interesting.
Does they have a red bloom? Is that why it's called
crimson?
A
crimson? You got it.
Mm-hmm.
A crimson trumpeted-shaped bloom.
749-B105. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have some more to share about the vining plants before we get to our guest. Chris Green, Inspector Chris, is coming up at 8 o'clock, but we've got another segment to finish up with the vines.
I keep wanting you to say Inspector Caluso. Just say it one time for me, Ernie. When you introduce him, say it one time.
Inspector Caluso. All right. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys who need to pause. We'll be right back. That was for Tony.
That was you better believe it.
Yeah. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our friend Chris Green is in. We're getting him settled in, and thanks for the donuts, Chris.
You're welcome.
It was very kind of him. He responded to the email. He said, coffee and donuts? And I said, well, we've got coffee. You bring the donuts, we'll be happy. I like cinnamon rolls. Before we get to Chris, we wanted to wrap up about the vining plants.
Some of our vining friends. Yeah, there's a couple more I just want to touch base on. And one I did forget about, and I don't know why, because a lot of people consider her to be the queen of all vining plants, and that's the clematis. And in England, they say clematis, but mm-hmm. the clematis is so popular amongst a lot of gardeners, both new, novice, avid. Everybody loves the clematis, and what a wonderful show, especially with color that you can get from the clematis. And something I just want to say about the clematis is this. When you plant one, be sure to just plant it a couple of inches to crown below the soil surface, because you'll get a lot more push from it, you know, different vines coming up, just in case, you know, you have an issue with clematis wilt. And just a little bit of tidbit information. And also, the clematis loves its shoulders to be in the sun and its feet in the shade. And when I say that, it's a good idea to plant a perennial of some sort, a low-growing perennial, right at the base in the front of it to protect its root structure, right there as it goes and meets the soil surface. And you'll have a beautiful plant. You know, Ernie, yours is gorgeous out there.
Boy, it's one of our favorites, and we've had that for a long time.
Yeah. So you can never go wrong with the clematis, and I almost forgot about that one. You know, there's so many different vining plants that we can talk about. But another one that a lot of people will ask for, and two, you will primarily find it available more in the seed format, is the hyacinth bean. It can get about 8 to 12 foot in height.
Mm-hmm.
Starts to bloom midsummer with clusters of rose purple flowers. which are accompanied over time by really cool looking maroon bean pods that you can save for the next season. So that's a really cool plant too. And also that is one that I would encourage you to also soak the seed overnight before you sow the seed in the garden or in a container or however you want to grow it. And last but not least, I got to talk a little bit about the good old morning glory. What do you think, Ernie? That's an old one. It's been around for a while. Beautiful heart-shaped leaves, bluish-purple blooms with white stripes, and definitely one of the more graceful climbers, very attractive, very appealing to look at. And you need to soak those seeds overnight. And another little tip, you might take a nail file or a pocket knife and just nick the seed. That really helps with the germination process with it. Or take a piece of sandpaper, a rough grit sandpaper, and rub over the seed. That helps with the germination process as well. But there you have it. Just a few of the vining friends that we can pick up at your local garden centers and nurseries that really have a lot of value about them that we often forget about. And if you want to go vertical, or you have a place to go vertical, or you want to hide an unsightly space, you know, or a view.
Usually one.
You know, if you live by Ernie and you don't want to look at him, you know, these are some of the go-to kind of guys. You know, a lot of times, you know, we as homeowners, we don't mean to be rude, but we also like to have a little bit of privacy. And something vining might also provide that for you as well.
Usually when I try to hide an unsightly area, I just put a shirt on. 749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we'd like to welcome in our friend Inspector Chris. Chris Green is the owner and senior inspector for I guess Inspector Chris is the name of the company. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And we're going to post that business card on his contact information is chris@inspectorchris.com or inspectorchris.com. You can go to his website and or via email. Number is 513-939-4036. And I have to share this with you. Last night, I was kind of looking through my Facebook feed just before I turned in, and a friend of mine had just posted, this was 15 hours ago, looking for a certified home inspector, any suggestions? And the first one someone posted was you.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. So then I got onto her page and posted that you were going to be joining us today on In and Around the House, and going to be here between the 8 o'clock hour, 8 and 9, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It is one of those things, as you and I talked at the Autism Rocks event about a month or so ago, one of those things where people really don't know what to do or what to look for.
As far as the home inspection is basically, we check the bones and everything on the house. Cosmetic stuff is not included in a home inspection.
Okay.
The walls, you know, stuff like that. Now, if we see something cosmetic that's damaged real bad, you know, you should report it in the inspection.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about the very first step when, let's say, for instance, you got a new homeowner. One of the first things they need to do is, do they contact the inspector, or is that done through the real estate agent?
Some realtors give their clients a list of, you know, two or three inspectors, and they let them choose what inspection company to go with.
Okay. And then, so they have to schedule a time with you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's the first kind of stuff that you look for?
Well, every inspector has a different way they do their inspections. I do everything on the outside, mm-hmm. and then I go on the inside.
Okay.
We look for, you know, foundation and exterior damages to the brick, the siding, whatever, whatever the exterior cladding is.
Mm-hmm.
If the roof is walkable, I will walk the roof.
Okay.
Some inspectors don't, but I do. Then we go inside and we start looking for, you know, anything that's safety hazards, fire hazards, most stuff we find, and a lot of homeowners don't know, is the smoke detectors or ionization smoke detectors.
Okay.
And ionization smoke detectors don't go off in smoldering fires.
Hmm. So I guess there's a difference in what kind of smoke detector you get?
Yes. Okay. There's photoelectric and there's ionization smoke detectors.
How would a homeowner know what's the difference? Are they marked or?
They have, ionization has a circle with an I in it.
Mm-hmm.
And photoelectric has a square with a P on it.
Okay.
And that's how you tell the difference.
And so I kind of didn't have any idea there was a different kind, you know?
Oh,
you
just yes.
Walk over and pick one up and go, yep, I'm good.
The city of Cincinnati is the first city in the United States to actually make an ordinance to have photoelectric smoke detectors in rental properties inside the city limits.
Wow.
Okay. And that changed. They voted on it February 27, 2013, after the UC fire New Year's Day.
Right, okay.
That killed two that. Students.
Yeah.
It had a bunch of ionization smoke detectors, and they weren't going off.
So no one was alerted, no one knew.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So March 1st of 2013, the new ordinance went into effect that all rental property inside the city limits has to have photoelectric smoke detectors, and they gave everybody 2 years to replace them.
And does that do they get those replaced through the local fire department, or they're responsible for doing that?
The landlord's responsible for replacing the smoke detectors, and a lot of people don't realize it or know it. I do a lot of rental property up in Clifton for sale,
mm-hmm.
and I think I had one that had a photoelectric smoke detector in it.
Wow! Out of all of them,
man.
That's fascinating. Now, what was the what would be the primary, I guess, thing that the first thing you look for when you walk up on a house?
The first thing I look for is I look at the soil, the grounds, make sure it's not draining towards the foundation. Then I look at the driveway as I'm walking up.
Okay.
Then I'm looking at the sidewalk, the front of the house, and then I go to the left and I check everything on the exterior of the house. I look for cracks in the foundation, downspouts draining too close, cracks in the brick, soffit damage, and then I get on the roof.
Well, we have, oddly enough, we have Monica on the line from Fort Wright who has a similar question. Hi, Monica. You live in Fort Wright?
I do, but I'm calling about a house that my son had purchased in September. We had a home inspection, and long story short, the driveway needed to come out. We were replacing the driveway and found that the drain in the driveway needed to be lowered. And upon having a plumber come, realized he went in the house, turned on the kitchen faucet, and it's running into the storm sewer out on the road. So the plumbing is routed completely wrong, and it was easy enough for an inspector to figure out. But now we are having to pay to have somebody come and rework all the plumbing. And I'm just wondering, if we go back to the home inspector, should he have seen that the water was not draining properly where it should have been?
That's a hard one to answer, because I mean, we run the water in every faucet and every plumbing fixture. We run the water. While we're running it, we look for leaks in the basement, leaks in the floor drain and stuff like that. But I myself have never walked outside to see if it was draining in the storm drain.
Is it, your question was, do you go after the city or do you go after the inspector?
Well, it's not the city. From what the plumber said, it's an older home.
Mm-hmm.
Said that he did not find clay pipe in that driveway. He found PVC, which means that somebody had already addressed that drain at some point. But now we don't know how extensive it is. So we did have a plumber run a camera down. He marked everything. But now I need to find out, do we have any recourse against the homeowner, against the, there was some, a structural engineer that came and did a report. They did some foundation work. I feel like somebody was looking in the basement and around the walls and maybe might have noticed that the pipes were not routed properly.
Yeah, that you can see if the basement's not finished. You can see if the pipes are routed properly.
Yeah, the basement was not finished. So I just don't know. You know, I feel like, you know, he's going to hold responsibility for something that should have been discovered by either a structural engineer or by the home inspector or by the homeowner himself who did extensive remodeling before my son bought the house.
How long has he owned the house?
Since September.
In September, okay.
It should have been, I mean, the homeowner should have disclosed it if they did that major repair work in the driveway.
Yeah, they did not. They did not because it was an investor who bought the house in a foreclosure. So he only bought the house a year ago this month. The investor did. So he flipped that house between April of 16 and September of 16.
I would check with the county to see if there was any permits pulled on it in that time period or prior to that. That way you'll know when the work was done.
Yeah. It looks like it's not been recent. I would not think it happened during the ownership of the person we bought it from.
Well, I never heard of that either. That's really bizarre to be run that way.
Yeah, I mean, Monica, you know what? If you don't mind, if you'll hold on the line, we'd like to get your phone number, and maybe we can get to a little more guidance on who you should contact there.
Okay.
Maybe the Planning Commission over at Northern Kentucky, over in Kenton County, might be able to assist you there. But hang on the line.
Okay, thanks.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Chris Green. Inspector Chris has joined us and talk a little bit about home inspection, and we'll try to get an answer. We will get an answer for Monica and that Fort Wright issue about the who she can come back and talk to about some issues. Give us a call, 749-B105. And Tony was going to talk to Inspector Chris about a couple of things.
Yeah, I think it's a great topic. And one is, Chris, years ago when I was younger, I hired somebody like yourself to go through a whole phase series of home inspections when we built our home. And the gentleman brought up some various issues along the way. You know, he was out there, inspected the dig and the footers and the foundation, the whole process of the construction phase, or phases, I should say. And it was interesting, some of the things that they found out, brought to my attention, also made it known to the builder. You know, it was a pretty popular, well-known builder. And I felt like that for the price that I paid, that I definitely got my money's worth, and there were some things spotted that could have been potential problems. Do you do those types of services?
Yes. Yeah, I do phase inspections. I do probably 30 or 40 a year.
Now, will you meet, like, when you do these types of inspections, do you like for the potential buyer or that new homeowner to be there with you to converse and talk about and point out things?
I prefer the client, the buyer, to be there on any inspection. That way they can see firsthand. It's easier to talk about it at the inspection, looking at it, than it is to look at pictures and talk over the
phone. Right.
So I prefer my client to be there at the for the entire inspection.
So typically, like, take me through the process of what will you typically find in a new home construction? If there are any issues at all, what are some of the most common that you've run across yourself?
The most common I've run across is the sill plates on new home are not bolted down.
Mm-hmm.
They have the bolts going through, but they don't put the washers and nuts on.
That was one that was in my report.
I find that all the time. I find a lot of the electrical junction boxes on the exterior wall aren't sealed where the wire goes in. Find a lot of almost every brand new home, there's no drip edge or ice guard on the roof. I find the bathroom exhaust vents are vented into the soffit, and they have to be vented to
through the roof.
Through the roof or the sidewall.
So they really in the soffit?
Yes.
Why? Is it just cutting corners? Or That's not even code,
right.
Is it?
No, the code states it has to go to the exterior.
Right.
It cannot go in the soffit, crawl space, or the attic. And that the code specifically states that.
Wow. And so when everything's covered up, like, who in the heck would know where the heck it is?
Right. Once you cover it up with insulation,
sure,
you don't know.
You don't know.
And the problem with the vent going into the soffit is your attic intake for ventilation.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the shower and you're using the exhaust fan,
mm-hmm,
and it's cold out, you got your hot, moist air going out and your cold air coming in is going to create moisture and then frost on the plywood, and then you're going to start getting mold up in the attic.
You know, something else that, now this is an interesting take here. When I did my total downstairs renovation, we gutted everything and went through the kitchen and all. You know what I did find? And this was really scary. When some of those guys that are running electrical wiring, they're just ripping that stuff and pulling it through the 2x4s, mm-hmm, through the walls. And there were situations where, which could have been a potential problem, that I found where sheathing was pulled back, ripped off. And like, how does that stuff get past electrical inspectors is beyond me. It just really, I was taken by that. And I know you as a home inspector, you can't tell with an existing home what's going on behind the walls.
Correct.
But are you looking for those things too as well? Yes. Things are just, yeah, Ernie, I was really taken by that.
I had one in Mainville about 2 weeks ago. The service entrance cable, the coating was completely ripped off of it. And when I got downstairs, I pulled the electric panel cover off, the mm-hmm, bed front cover, mm-hmm, and water was pouring in the electric panel.
Holy cow.
So I didn't put the cover back on. I called Duke, called the listing agent, told him they had to replace the service entrance cable.
Right.
They repaired it, sent me a picture, and they took roof tar and they covered the opening on the wire. And that's all they did.
And they expected that
that's amazing.
To fly? And I guess you said, no, that won't work.
Right. I told them to replace it. It needs to be replaced.
Wow. You know, that's one of the things, I hate the term that we've grown accustomed to here, especially in the U.S., buyer beware.
Yep.
You know, because the buyer has every good intentions of expecting the product to be right when they purchase it, especially a home. It is the major purchase of a lifetime.
Correct.
And especially young parents, new homeowners. And when something, just like Monica was talking about, you know, her son purchased the house, and now there's this other issue that's going to be very costly.
Correct. I mean, purchasing a home is probably the biggest investment you're going to make in your life.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're buying a new motorcycle.
Or for Ernie, a box of donuts might be a big investment. Another great question. We have our good friends over at Bromwell's, downtown Cincinnati, oldest business, operating business in Cincinnati, as a matter of fact. When they were in, they were telling us, too, about, like, some of the newer home construction. They don't do the chimneys anymore. You know, they're just doing that little outside flue vent and stuff like that.
Right, sidewall venting.
Yeah, sidewall venting. Would you find any issues with that?
I haven't. I mean, the biggest issue I find with it is the siding on the outside, mm-hmm, is turning black from the smoke and the soot.
Got it.
That's the biggest issue I found with it.
Yeah, I don't know. You see a lot of the newer homes that are being constructed, that's kind of the, mm-hmm, the standard. You know, it's not like having the old brick chimney and all that other stuff and the flue in there like it should be, where everything draws properly. I'm not saying that those don't draw properly, but that's just something doesn't seem right about that to me.
Sure. And, I mean, speaking of chimneys, most realtors and most home buyers and home sellers aren't aware of, the NFPA 211 requires a level 2 chimney inspection on the sale or transfer of any property. And a lot of people don't even know that.
So is that for firewood fireplace chimneys, or does it matter?
Any chimney requires a level 2 inspection per NFPA 211.
So what are they looking, you know, that's all Greek to me. It sounds like some Einstein formula there. What's that mean?
When a level 2, we do a level 1, which is just a visual inspection, right, of the chimney. A level 2 is a more in-depth thing. They'll remove parts that are readily accessible.
Okay.
And they run a camera up to make sure that the flue tiles are sealed and not gapped, so fire and smoke can't go between the flue tiles and the chimney and cause a chimney fire.
So if I was to buy Ernie's house, you have any advice for me? I mean, do you know anything that I should know?
Run! Do you know anybody at a heavy equipment company that can...
You know, as a matter of fact, I do. I know some folks over there with Caterpillar. No.
Just start all...
There you go. I'm sorry, Ernie. I had to throw that out there.
No. We have our friend Chris Green in with us, Inspector Chris, and we're talking about home inspections and some pitfalls. We do need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that. You can jump on his website, InspectorChris.com. You can email him at Chris@InspectorChris.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Chris Green in, Inspector Chris. His phone number is 513-939-4036. And he's about to share some information with you that I just was just jaw-dropping. And as soon as I get home, I am taking immediate action. We're going to post these on our site. I'm going to send them to our producer right now. But tell me about this bulb that you just pulled out of your pocket.
The CFL light bulbs, since 2012, they've had 5 fire hazard recalls on them. And just recently released was a survey for the last 4 years by the German EPA and the United States EPA that the light bulbs cause cluster headaches, dizziness, migraine, seizures, fatigue, anxiety, inability to concentrate, and it is... It'll cause poisonous to the mind, the sensory system, and the liver, the kidneys, and likewise harm the cardiovascular and disrupt the immune system. It prompts tremors, nervousness, sleep disorders, memory loss, migraines, malignancy, and Alzheimer's.
Holy cow.
And also causes cancers. If the bulb breaks inside your house, you are to open all doors and windows and leave the house for 15 minutes because it releases 20 times more mercury in the air than tolerable.
Wow. And there are those bulbs in every house in America. I almost guarantee you.
Well, this one was in my nightstand, Bob, right? Light right next to my nightstand. This is one from the local energy company.
That one is a store bought one.
Okay.
But if you look at the bulb on the backside, they swell up and they get a little bubble on them. And they keep swelling.
I see it right here.
And it'll shoot a flame out and never fill with mercury.
Wow. I'd rather bite my old thermometer. Remember, Mom would put that thermometer underneath your tongue?
Right, yeah.
I can visually see 3 of those that I know are in my house right now, and I'm glad I go take them down.
That's just like, you know, the ionization smoke detectors.
Yeah.
They're in every house.
Right.
The light bulbs, GE in Sylvania actually stopped producing this light bulb. In December, and they come out with a different light bulb.
So all those potential hazards that you just rattled off.
Yes.
Is that a result of that bulb breaking or not breaking or both?
Both.
Really?
Yes.
That's what's been wrong with me all this time, Ernie.
Well,
no wonder I'm tired when I get in here in the morning.
Yeah. I'm at a loss for words.
You want to pause for a second get yourself together?
No, it's that serious. Jump onto our In and Around the House Facebook page right now and take a look. You probably have these bulbs in your house, and it might explain a lot why you're fatigued, why you're confused, and now they're fire hazards. I would have never known that. Thank you so much for sharing that information. That is unbelievable, because when everyone years ago looked at that bulb and thought, this, now we're saving energy because we're using these newly designed bulbs, and all effectual, we're poisoning ourselves.
Correct. I mean, there's recalls all the time.
Yeah.
There's recalls that are out on LED bulbs right now.
Man.
And
frightening. You know, if you have one of those in a young child's room, you got to get it out right now.
And, well, I mean, what if it's in your child's room and your child accidentally breaks it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Oh,
man, that's fantastic.
So
jump on our Facebook page. Chris was kind enough. It was kind of funny. we went into the break, and I said, well, do you want to touch on anything specific? And he goes, yeah, I want to talk about these bulbs. And he started describing what was going on with these and how dangerous they were. And I said, well, what do they look like? And he reaches in his pocket and brings one out of his pocket. He said, I brought it in just to show it to you. So, it's up on our Facebook page now. So take a moment, get to In and Around the House Facebook page and take a look at that bulb. And if you have one in your house, get it out as soon as possible. Is that good advice?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So go over that one more time. It was commonly sold, and everyone
It's commonly it. Sold. Since 2012, there have been 5 fire hazard recalls on it.
Okay.
The brand that Duke gives away has had 3 fire hazard recalls.
Okay.
GE and Sylvania stopped producing the bulb in December.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you got them in your house, get rid of them.
Was there ever a letter that was sent out to homeowners to...
Not to my knowledge. I've never received one. Myself, I check recalls every morning before I leave my house. I go on an inspection. I check for recalls. And I go through and just write down everything that's been recalled. That way, if I run across it on a house, I know.
And by the way, that donut you just woofed down has been recalled, Ernie.
Well, you're not getting it back.
There's some tainted sugar in there.
And so what happens with these bulbs, and they're the spiral bulbs that you are pretty familiar with. They were sold like gangbusters years ago.
Yeah, they were supposed to be the energy-efficient bulb.
Mm-hmm. So everybody was going to save money. And you'll notice on the picture on our Facebook page that there is a small bubble on the bottom ring of that glass.
Now, you'll get a bubble there, or you'll also get a bubble right here.
Mm-hmm. On the top.
On the top of it.
And what Chris was describing is that that's the first, I guess, breach in the system. And from there, that cylinder or that bulb is going to swell again, and then it's going to burst, and then tell us what happens.
Well, then it releases it. Once it breaks, it'll shoot a flame out of it, and it releases 20 times more than the tolerable mercury allowed in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they say if you break them in the house, open your doors and windows and leave for minimum 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So is there an alternative suggestion that you have for that bulb? You can't hardly find incandescent lights, you know, the bulbs, the old traditional bulbs. So, like, are there other bulbs that are safer that you know about?
LED bulbs are the thing now.
Right.
And there's some LED bulbs that are recalled now.
Mm-hmm.
So
I guess for a homeowner, if you were to make a purchase or, you know, buy a number of bulbs... Mm-hmm. Just maybe
don't
do a
buy
little,
a CFL.
Just do a little research. No CFL.
Don't buy a CFL bulb.
Got it.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We have Chris Green, Inspector Chris, with us. We need to pause for a moment, but just since we posted that, guys, we have 5 questions posted about these bulbs. When we come back, we're going to explore those questions and get some answers for you. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Chris Green, Inspector Chris, with us. We've been talking about home inspectors, inspections, and important things you need to know. And he brought us something and brought to light a real dangerous scenario. You probably have these bulbs in your house. Your parents or grandparents probably do. And if you do, remove them as soon as you can. We posted a picture. And what's the name of this bulb?
CFL
bulb, and they were sold years ago, and it was where we were trying to transition from incandescent bulbs to something safer or more fuel efficient, so to speak, where we could save some money. Christy George said, very scary stuff. Is there a link to the article referenced? And yes, we just had John look it up, and it is now posted, so you can click right on the link. Stephanie Harper asked us to do the same thing. And all that info is now on our Facebook page. And we got to give our friend Robin Tidwell a little mention, too. She goes, hey, Chris, thanks. So what are we supposed to use, candles?
Robin, yes, use candles.
Candles.
You're safer.
real quick, too, did you see the post from Jane Bay? Now, that's a CFL, correct, or not? I have Chris take a look at that.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, she's like, is it a certain brand of that particular type of bulb or all of those types of bulbs?
There's several different
varieties of CFLs out there.
Yeah, there's the spiral ones,
mm-hmm.
the tube, loop tube
ones. So are all the spiral CFLs?
Yes.
So like what I'm seeing here from Jane Bay would be?
Yes, that's a CFL.
CFL, okay. Yep, Jane, if you're still listening, I'm sure you are. That definitely, according to Chris, is CFL. So that's really interesting. Yeah. This is the first time I've heard this. I've never
Me
heard
too.
Of this. Yeah, it's the first time I've heard of this.
Most people haven't. They don't alert everybody.
I have to admit, I am absolutely stunned into silence thinking.
I found out about it by checking the recalls.
Research. Yeah.
When I go through the, Consumer Safety Protection Agency and I check recalls, and I ran across it and I started checking all of them, and there was probably 15 different CFL bulbs that were recalled for fire hazards.
Hmm. Well, now we've given you some inside information and very important. One of the things that you need to do is start looking around your house. And if you have elderly parents, go to their house, check their bulbs. Now, how do we dispose of them once we remove them from the sockets and stuff?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I
guess there isn't a safe place to take them.
There's not a safe place to take them.
Out of the house, at least.
Yeah, get them out of the house. I'm not sure if taking them to the landfill would matter or not. I think there was something in this bulletin that I gave you that said that they're dangerous to waste.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do some more research on that. So follow up on our post there. We'll find out what they suggest, how we dispose of those, because we certainly don't want to put them in the landfill. If they're that dangerous in the house, they got to be that dangerous in the landfill.
Right.
Right,
exactly.
Chris, contact Chris, Inspector Chris, at 513-939-4036. You can email him at chris@inspectorchris or go to his website, inspectorchris.com. You provided a wealth of information here, brother. That's
what I'm here for.
Yes. Yes.
Educate my clients.
Yeah. And thank you so much. I get another message that, thank you so much for sharing. This is crazy. We're going to try to find it, and they posted a picture of a bulb in their house.
Yes, that's CFL.
Yeah. And, now we need to, we've recognized the problem, and now we have to find the solution of where we put them and what we're going to do with them. So stay tuned to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and, Chris Green. You can contact him. We've got his info posted on our Facebook page. We're going to continue to answer these questions because they're continuing to pour in on our post about the bulbs, and they're called CFL bulbs. Let's start walking around your house and take a look. And, dangerous stuff. It's right in your home, and you never know about it.
Right.
Okay. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Inspector Chris. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have our friend Chris Green, Inspector Chris, in with us. We've been learning an awful lot. And one of the things that we just shared with you a few minutes ago is how important it is to get a good home inspection. And I guess the real question is, how do you find a good inspector, Chris?
Go to ashy.org or ashy.com.
Okay.
Make sure you get a certified or at least an ashy inspector.
Okay. And pardon my ignorance, which I display quite often. Is that ASHE?
ASHI, American Society of Home Inspectors.
Okay.
In Ohio, you don't have to be a licensed, so all of you guys here can go inspect the home tomorrow.
We can be inspectors.
And
we get a badge too?
No. That's for certified inspectors. Yeah. I'm ASHI certified.
Gotcha.
Kentucky requires a license, and Indiana requires a license. Ohio doesn't require a license.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you want an ASHI, you want an ASHI certified inspector, or at least an ASHI inspector.
Okay.
ASHI's the oldest home inspection organization in the country.
Mm-hmm.
They're the strictest. They have the toughest standards of practice and code of ethics. We just started a chapter here in Cincinnati. It's called OSO ASHI for Ohio Southern ASHI, and I'm the president of that.
Okay.
And we're trying to get members to join, the inspectors in the area to join that.
And how would they go about doing that, since we have, I'm sure we have some inspectors listening?
Oh, they could contact me.
Okay.
Or go to osoashi.org. The website is in the process of being done, so I'm not sure what all is on there. They can email me, Chris mm-hmm. at inspectorchris.com, or call me.
Okay. And you mentioned you did a segment for one of our local television stations, and when they ask you, how do you know if you're getting a good inspector?
Inspect your inspector.
Inspect the inspector.
Inspect your inspector. There's, you know, I mean, there's, the prices vary for inspector. There's no set fee.
Yeah.
There's some inspectors out there that charge, you know, $199, and there's some that charge $600.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you get what you pay for.
Do you typically, when you finalize and summarize everything, does the homeowner or the potential buyer, do they get a report, like a yes. typed up report from you?
Yeah, we get the electronic version to them mm-hmm. within 24 hours.
Okay.
Unless there's a radon test.
Right.
Which the radon test has to sit in the house for a minimum 48 hours.
Yeah, that's a good question. Radon. I know that that's been a lot of concern in recent years. And mm-hmm. the house next to me, they have a radon
mitigation system.
Yes, that takes it out. I always wondered, I shouldn't say this, I kind of covered mine with a cabinet down in the basement with my workbench.
So. Don't ever call me stupid again.
Well, I don't know. But I mean, I could get to it rather easily. But is that really a big issue?
Yes. Yeah, so, radon is actually surpassed cigarette smoking and causing lung cancer.
Really? Yes. So do you have the equipment to go in and properly analyze that? Do you do that?
We do radon testing. There's a lot of inspectors that do radon testing. And the EPA says if it's 4.0 or greater, it has to be mitigated. If it's 2.0 or greater, it has to be tested.
Oh, I should have mine tested, I guess. That could be what's wrong with me also, Ernie.
Yeah,
the light bulb, the radon.
Yeah.
If you have a
I'm never home, though.
If you have a mitigation system,
yeah.
It's easy to monitor it and see if it's working.
Right. Yeah, everything's in place, and then they have the vent for running it outside and all that good stuff, but I never really had it checked. And
well, now if you that have you a mitigation just, system, you probably have a low lower, a lower level.
No, I don't have the system, just the pipes there. And the vent, if I...
Does it have a fan on it?
No, it does not have all of that. No,
yeah,
not
at all. That's the mitigation system. It looks like a flying...
Can I use the old squirrel vent from my old hot water tank?
Sure.
Come on.
Sure.
I can't rig it up?
Sure.
All right. Don't take me serious right there. I'm not... I would do it properly if it needs to be done.
Sure. Use a squirrel cage, and I'll make sure I put it in the on my Facebook page and
yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. Show and tell. There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah.
Yes.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Chris Green in with us, and Chris is available at chris@inspectorchris.com or inspectorchris.com, and got that info posted on our Facebook page, too. And, boy, it's just been a wealth of information. The Facebook page is blowing up, as they say. My phone, I'm getting texts from my friends who have been listening going, holy cow, I've got a couple of those. Oh, my over my mom's house, there's a few of those. So go get them and get them at least out of the house. That's the most important thing. And be careful about what you replace them with. And, Chris, one more time, tell us your availability. I mean, they can reach you through the phone number. I just called 513-939-4036. What's the turnaround by the time someone calls you and says, hey, I've got to have a home inspection?
Right now, I'm slammed.
Yeah.
The market's on fire right now. Many home inspectors are booked up. I'm booked completely solid for next week.
Right. So plan ahead.
Yeah, plan ahead. The problem with the market, is as hot as it is right now,
mm-hmm.
is the sellers aren't giving the buyers enough time to get a home inspection.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I had a call. I had three calls last Saturday that they had 5 days to get an inspection.
Mm.
And Saturday and Sunday count as a day.
Holy cow.
So
you got no chance.
There's not enough of you, are there?
There's not enough qualified inspectors.
Mm-hmm. I know. I found it though. I think this is a great topic, and I found it so beneficial when I did that. I was a youngster, and you know, I just want to know what I was walking into, what I was getting, was what I was supposed to be getting, and it was a couple hundred dollars, and I felt that it was good money well spent. And I would encourage everybody that's looking to buy a home for the very first time, or you're building a home, save yourself some headaches down the road. That's for sure. Do you find a lot of issues with decks? Do you inspect decks for people?
I'm one of three certified deck inspectors. And
I mean, that's another thing. I've seen some shoddy deck work out there.
I have run across, since 2001 doing home inspections, I have run across one deck that was properly built.
Properly built?
Aren't they to be inspected as well? I mean, if the proper permits are obtained and so forth by the cities, or are those guys really not as experienced? Or are they lacking?
Most.
Or they turn their heads?
Most do a soil inspection and a final inspection. They're not really inspected.
Interesting. I know that I put mine on 15, I have 15 6x6 posts underneath my deck on piers, and I hope it's sound, but that's scary stuff. And it was inspected too, so.
Yeah, the deck codes have really changed dramatically.
I'm sure they have since I've done it first.
Since 2006 to now, the last deck change was crazy. All the requirements, because there's about 3,500 decks that collapse every year in the United States. From improper building.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So what has changed dramatically? Give me an example.
How people used to put the support beam and bolt it to the front of the post.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's no longer allowed.
Hmm.
Because the weight of the deck could shear the bolts and cause the decks.
Now, I notched out my 6x6,
yeah,
and they rest right on it, and then I bolted it.
That's the way they're supposed to be done.
Okay.
They're supposed to be rested on top of it, notched out or on top of it.
Yeah, mine was notched out on both sides.
You're not allowed to use nails on a deck at all. There's
even with the decking?
Nails are not allowed permitted.
Even with the top decking?
Wow.
Nails are not permitted because they have a history backing out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
The code specifically states you're not allowed to toenail on a deck. So every floor joist has to have a hurricane clip on the support beam and the floor joist all the way across it.
What about the header board up against the house?
The header board has to be bolted between each floor joist, and they have to be staggered.
Now, I bolted mine through the wall.
Yeah.
I went through it on the other side, too.
Right. And now there's a L bracket that gets bolted to about every other joist that goes 6 inches into the house.
Really?
And you have to have ledger flashing against the ledger board on the house. Most decks don't have ledger flashing. Most decks don't have hurricane.
So what's the purpose of the flashing? Keep the ledger, moisture and water?
The ledger flashing prevents water from getting behind the ledger board and going into the house at the bolt holes.
Okay.
So
makes
that's
sense.
And then you have to have most people build decks level with their patio door. That's the worst thing you can do because in snow loads, snowball builds up there and leak right through the bottom of the patio door and into the house.
Oh.
So they require a 6-inch step on patio doors.
Good move. Makes perfect sense. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Chris Green from InspectorChris.com. And sharing a wealth of information. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to wrap up and recap our information that we've received from Chris. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've had our friend Chris Green from Inspector Chris in, sharing a lot of information and a couple of other things we want to touch base on before we get out of here today. We want to revisit the smoke detectors.
Yes, the smoke detectors are a big thing. Most homes are... they have the ionization smoke detectors, and like I said, they won't go off in a smoldering fire. in the state of Ohio only since 2000, there have been 24 deaths at college campuses due to inoperative or failure smoke detectors.
Okay. And you posted, or you had us look at a video, which is pretty shocking, and you've done this demonstration before. Tell us the difference between the smoke detectors and what we need to make certain, which one we need to make certain we have in our homes.
The ionization smoke detectors either have a circle with an eye on it, or you have to take it apart and look on the back of it, and it'll say ionization.
Okay.
The photoelectrics have a square with a P on it, or you can take it apart and it'll say photoelectric.
Okay.
Ionization smoke detectors aren't designed to pick up large particle smoke.
Okay.
So when smoldering fires, it's larger particle smoke, so it won't go through the filter and alert the occupants on the fire. There was a fire last week in Walnut Hills that killed the elderly couple.
Right. Yep,
there was no smoke detectors.
Wow. Shocking. This day and age.
People take the ionization smoke detectors. They take them down. Most fire departments call them nuisance alarms because if you burn toast, turn on electric stove, they'll go off.
That's exactly right.
That is an ionization smoke detector. Okay. A photoelectric will not go off.
Okay. Fascinating information.
Photoelectrics recognize high flaming fires and also large particle smoke.
Great. And you can get some more of that information by clicking on our link to Inspector Chris's website and webpage. And just been fascinating learning this stuff. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And we're definitely going to have you come back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And again, you can reach Inspector Chris Green at inspectorchris.com or inspectorchris.com is his website, 513-939-4036. Thank you very much again, brother, and we will talk to you next week. Have a great weekend.